evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, May 15, 2019. Protesters in Sudan reach a deal with the military council on a transitional government.
She said the agreement announced yesterday was satisfying to some extent, as it's a good idea. But she hopes that things will go better tonight.
And what is next for the Sudanese people?
It is the military who's calling the shots, and they want to retain that control. And so I think they're negotiating to try to ensure that there's a majority military representation on that. How they navigate that is very much at the heart of where this will go.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's protest leaders and the Transitional Military Council have agreed on the main structure of a transitional government after the weeks-long standoff between the two sides. As we hear from Naba Mohiyadin, it is still not clear which side will have a majority in the new transitional ruling council.
Sudan's protesters on Wednesday greeted the late-night deal between the military and opposition on the main structures of a three-year transitional government with a mixture of hope and skepticism. The Opposition Declaration of Freedom and Change Forces, DFCF, and Transitional Military Council made the announcement late Tuesday. The two sides split the difference on a timeline for Sudan's elections between the opposition's demand for a four-year transition and the military's wanting 2 years. The power-sharing agreement includes three councils to run the government, sovereign ministers and legislative. The DFCF would have two-thirds of the seats in the 300-seat parliament. But there is no agreement yet on which side civilians or the military will have a majority in the ruling sovereign council until elections in 2022. Ruwa Ubaid said she and fellow protesters are still waiting for an announcement on a final agreement expected Wednesday night. She said the agreement announced yesterday was satisfying to some extent, as it's a good idea. But she hopes that things will go better tonight. She says, regarding the authorities of the Sovereign Council, we are waiting to see the results and hope it will be satisfying for everyone, she says. The agreement is the most significant step forward in Sudan's weeks-long standoff between thousands of protesters demanding civilian rule and the military. An attack on the protesters sitting around the defense ministry on Monday night left at least 6 people dead, dozens injured, and raised fears the talks might fall apart. But protest leaders and the military were quick to say negotiations would continue and announced late Tuesday that a committee was set up to investigate the attack. Nonetheless, protesters reinforced steel and rock walls around the sit-in, which started April 6 to demand former President Omar al-Bashir step down. Even after the military ousted Bashir on April 11 from 3 decades in power, protests continued for civilian rule. Sitting in a chair near newly erected barricades, protester Othman Karar warned a compromise with the military might not satisfy everyone. In the sitting area, people are insisting on their full demands. Any compromise will be apportioning power of the revolution, he says. As I noticed, those young people won't easily back down, adds Karar. The first 6 months of the agreed transition are to be dedicated to seeking peace in areas of conflict in Sudan, such as war-torn Darfur, South Kordofan, and the Blue Nile. Millions of people in Sudan have been affected by the conflicts and hundreds of thousands displaced. Fighting erupted again in 2015 as Bashir's forces tried to regain control of rebel-held territory 3 months before April elections. Bashir is wanted by the International Criminal Court for alleged war crimes and genocide in Darfur, but the military has refused to hand over the former president. Naba Mohiyadin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Joseph Sigley is the director of Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He spoke to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed Ashinawe about what is next for Sudan in the push for a civilian-led transitional government.
I think we have to be cautious about what we're seeing come out of Khartoum. They've laid out some of the general structures of what a transitional government would entail, but they still have to provide the details of what seems the most important of these governing entities, the Sovereign Council, which is supposed to be 11-member governing committee. And that seems to be where the real decision-making will take place. And at this point, there is still disagreement about who will be the main driver of that council. And I think this just speaks to the ongoing tension and disagreement between the military leaders and the protesters over the direction of the country.
Could the composition of the Sovereign Council be a sticking point?
Well, I think it can be. I think it's at the center of the disagreement. The protesters want a majority of the members to be civilians and reformists. The military wants to retain control. The government under President Bashir has been a military-dominated government. And even with his ouster, it is the military who's calling the shots. And they want to retain that control. And so I think they're negotiating to try to ensure that there's a majority military representation on that. And so I think how they navigate that is very much at the heart of where this will go. On the positive side, it seems at least they're both sides are acknowledging that they need some representation from the others. But in the end, there's fundamental differences over who claims the direction and who claims ownership over the transition.
The two sides also agreed to form a new transitional civilian government to run the country's day-to-day affairs. How would such civilian government be formed?
A lot of these details are yet to be announced and determined. I think the expectation is that there would be a cabinet identified, and the different cabinet ministers would then be responsible for the day-to-day manage of the government. But again, I think their direction will largely come from that Sovereign Council. And so all of these things are going to be interconnected.
During the transitional period, a new parliament will be composed of 300 members, of which 67% will be from the Alliance for Freedom and Change, and the rest will be from other political groups. Would such majority for the Alliance preserve the goals of the Sudanese revolution?
Well, I think it's a positive step in that with a strong majority of representatives from the Alliance, that they have the potential to institutionalize a lot of the reforms that are going to be necessary. And I think that's important to keep in mind, that a real transition involves more than a change in leadership. It involves changing the laws. It involves changing the institutions that have long dominated government there in Sudan. And you've had power vested with certain part of the Bashir party, as well as the military, for decades. And it's going to take some time to disentangle politics from all of the state institutions. So to the extent that the parliament will be in a position to pass laws and, in fact, reform the constitution to ensure that there's broader participation and more equity within Sudanese society, that's a good step for really sustaining the change. But much will be dependent on how the Sovereign Council is determined.
That's Joseph Sigley, director of Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with my colleague Mohamed Al-Ashenawi. Still on Sudan, Sadiq al-Mahdi's political career is one of the longest in modern Sudanese history, including two terms as prime minister, amid unprecedented upheaval that has seen mass street protest and a military coup. Al-Mahdi says he will step aside from partisan politics. Reporter Jason Patinkin spoke to al-Mahdi at his home in Khartoum.
With a people-led revolution still rocking Sudan, former Prime Minister Sadiq al-Mahdi, the country's last democratically elected leader, might be expected to jump back into the political horse race. The 83-year-old leader has a reputation as a political survivor and returned to Sudan in December from a year in self-imposed exile amid massive anti-government protests. But instead, he says it's time for him to have a different role. Not only has his opposition UMA party declined to be part of any transitional government, but Mahdi himself says he will not run in any future elections.
I will have no post in the transition or in the coming elections. In fact, I am looking for a different career. I will stand down in such political, partisan, and executive roles.
The announcement, made in a wide-ranging interview for VOA, marks a new era for politics in Sudan. Al-Mahdi has played a central role in Sudan's political life for over a half century. He was prime minister from 1966 to 1967, and again from 1986 until 1989, when he was ousted by an alliance of Islamists and the military, led by former President Omar al-Bashir. Bashir ruled for nearly 30 years and was accused of corruption and committing war crimes in Sudan's Darfur region. The army ousted him in April after citizens across the country staged months of street protests against his rule. The mass demonstrations continue today as protesters are demanding the Transitional Military Council hand power to a civilian government. Although Al-Mahdi is not taking a leading role in the protests since his return to Sudan, he has nothing but praise for the revolution.
This last revolutionary movement lasted for 4 months. This is longer than any period in the past. Such phenomena is completely new to Sudanese politics. And also what's new to it is the role of the youth. I thought the youth under this regime had had their future stolen. I thought they were a lost generation. In fact, they surprised me by being so dynamic and so patriotic. It looks and is an expression of the return of the soul to Sudan. Now this is a restoration of hope and honor for the country.
The ruling military council has been negotiating with protest leaders on a transitional government to govern until fresh elections. But despite an agreement Monday on the structure of a transitional authority, violence broke out after nightfall. Several protesters and one military officer were killed, and dozens of civilians wounded in what witnesses said were attacks by security forces on the demonstration. Speaking before the attacks, Al-Mahdi urged the military and civilians to work together to organize quick elections.
I think the role of the military, who took power, military council, is to hold power but make for an immediate and quick transformation of executive power to a civilian council of ministers. Civilians could be as autocratic as the military. So what we need is a quick general and free elections so that power is really handed over to the people. Of course, we cannot do that before dismantling the power centers of the outgoing regime. This should be agreed and should be implemented as soon as possible.
Sudan's protesters have since April refused to leave their sit-in around the defense ministry until a civilian government is in place. Most do not trust the military to willingly hand over power and point out that the military leaders still include those who supported Bashir and atrocities committed in Sudan's Darfur region. Jason Patingan for VOA News, Omdurman.
Charges brought against former President Omar al-Bashir are a first step to facing justice. But some observers say Sudanese authorities must hand him over to the International Criminal Court. Amnesty International Sudan researcher Ahmed Az-Zubair says the military council's announcement this week of the charges against Bashir lack details and says the public needs to have confidence in the legal process.
The only thing mentioned in the announcement, they are going to charge him by the incitement of criminal activities or killing of protesters during since December 2018. But there is no any details, you know, the type of charges and based on any kind of articles according to Sudan criminal law.
Do the lack of details and the lack of the appearance of al-Bashir in public, does that worry you at all?
Well, one of the things that we requested the military council to do is just to declare publicly the whereabouts of Omar al-Bashir. And because, of course, without any confirmation from independent sources, people say he's in a Copper Prison, that's a federal prison in Khartoum. But there is no other confirmation apart from just announcement, not really official, from the military council spokesperson a few weeks ago.
The charges were announced yesterday, and I'm wondering, where does the ICC land in this conversation? I mean, Amnesty International has called on the authorities to hand over al-Bashir to ICC. So who does justice belong to? Does it belong to the prosecutors in Sudan, or should al-Bashir be transferred to the ICC?
Well, I think that's our first call since the arrest and detention of Omar al-Bashir in April. We called the Sudanese authorities to hand him over to the ICC because there is heinous crimes committed, especially in Darfur. War crimes, crime against humanity, and genocide. And he needs to face these charges. And then the government come up with this criminal charges against him yesterday. Of course, there is a demand by the families of the victims, especially those killed since December. They want to see justice done. And I think maybe for domestic reasons, the government made this kind of announcement. But ideally for us, he needs to face these also criminal charges that are announced by the prosecution. Also, we need to see face the charges announced by the ICC as well.
There's a lot of focus put on al-Bashir. And of course, Amnesty International just released a statement demanding that he face justice. But what about the security officials around al-Bashir?
Well, as you know, in the relation to the ICC case, there is another three senior former government officials, especially the former Minister of Defense, and also the former Interior Minister of State, Ahmed Haroun, and also there is a tribal militia, also indicted by the ICC. And also we want all these people to be, I think we call this for a long time, and we want them to be handed over by Sudanese authorities to the ICC. I think this is our position since the beginning of the case with the ICC.
That was Ahmed Az-Zubair, Amnesty International Sudan researcher, speaking to my colleague Ayen Dengbior from Nairobi. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a new survey reveals most South Sudanese are optimistic about lasting peace in their country. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite cultural tradition and why?
When in the evening, people used to sit together when we were small. Elders, you know, in the evening, they share stories. You know, they tell us past histories. They tell us events that happened during their period, during their time.
What I love about the tradition of the Hausas or Fulanis is the way they wear their clothes. The clothes we use, the atamfaya. There's this Asian tradition of the Hausas, it's like two different wrappers, you tie one and you cover up yourself with one. I love that one.
I love my culture, and so all activities, I like them. So there's no particular one I can say I like and this one I don't like. So there's no favorite.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The United Nations mission in South Sudan says despite the news about conflict in South Sudan, a perception survey it carried out across the country found there is hope among South Sudanese that peace is possible. on Chief David Shearer is calling on the parties to the deal to use the six-month extension to achieve sustainable peace in the country. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
The results of the perception survey released today indicate more South Sudanese think the security situation in the country has improved, and they believe that peace can prevail across the country if the parties continue to implement the security arrangements. The report is based on findings of face-to-face interviews with more than 2,000 people conducted over the past 5 months in towns, villages, and UN-run protection of civilian sites in 10 areas where UNMISS has bases. Sierra says a report carried by a Jordan-based consulting firm indicates that out of the more than 2,000 people interviewed, 80% said the security situation has greatly improved compared to a year ago after the revitalized peace agreement was signed.
Only 5% thought it was worse or much worse. So pretty overwhelming, 80% feeling it was either better or much better than it was 1 year ago. And this demonstrates to us that most people do feel that the security situation is continuing to improve.
Sierra says the survey also focused on the prospects for peace by asking people how likely it was that there would be lasting peace in a year's time.
89% said it was either very or somewhat likely that there will be durable peace this year. So nearly 90% believe, are optimistic effectively, that there will be peace in the coming 1 year. So again, people, despite what has happened to them, feel optimistic about the future going forward.
The survey also found that 79% of the people interviewed have lost at least one family member or have family members who were displaced during the nearly 6 years of conflict because the government has failed to protect them. Sierra says the survey shows that overall, the South Sudanese people are optimistic about the future.
Too often the news that we hear in South Sudan is negative, and that's not surprising given what the country has gone through. But I think that the survey offers some hope that we are on the right path, or more particularly that people believe we should be on the right path and that peace can be achieved.
But one Juba resident who did not want to be mentioned for fear of government reprisal says he doesn't see any security improvement in the town, especially in recent days.
As a civilian, I've been moving around and I see so many soldiers in every location. So the security situation is not all that okay. That is what I see, because if you see many people, less the soldiers moving in uniform, is something that is bad for civilians like us. And also this process of whereby they check our houses door to door is something that is not good. At least the people should be informed before these soldiers go to check the civilian houses where they say they are checking guns. So currently, the security situation is not fine.
The UNMISS chief says such surveys should be able to motivate the parties to work towards achieving sustainable peace for the South Sudanese people by cultivating the political will that is needed to fully implement the peace agreement. Asked to comment on a social media campaign by a group that calls itself the Red Card Movement, which is urging youth to turn out in large numbers on Thursday to protest against the Kiir administration, Sierra has this to say.
People have the right to attend rallies, as they do in any other country, so long as they undertake that in a peaceful and respectful way. So people have a right to express their opinion. And from the same point, from the government's point of view, they have to ensure that the demonstration is carried out in a safe and orderly way. But other than that, it's the right of citizens to attend rallies if they would like to.
South Sudanese government officials today deployed more military and national security service personnel around strategic locations around Juba, as they have for the past several days. Security officials were also checking a majority of vehicles passing through the capital. Last week, South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwei said the stepped-up security was in preparation for the May 16th SPLM-SPLA Day. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Yei, where church leaders of the South Sudan Council of Churches are appealing to opposition and government leaders to use the six-month extension of the pre-transitional period to promote the rule of law and human rights violations and improve security. The church leaders wrapped a joint visit to Yei River State on Tuesday, as we hear from Daniel Friday Martin.
The church leaders say even though parties to the agreement have slightly improved security and trust among various groups in South Sudan, the leaders must take more practical steps to carry out the peace deal, including implementing all security arrangements. Reverend James Bataf of the South Sudan Presbyterian and Evangelical Church appealed to leaders to continue to use dialogue to resolve any differences and to use the extra 6 months to reach out to groups that did not sign the peace deal.
The concern of choice means even the people who have not signed, we need them to sign. It is a good time and to lead the people to dialogue. We must understand between ourselves together. As a South Sudanese, if you need a reconciliation, you cannot talk bad words and lead the people to be angry again. By now, at the beam of the churches, the peace in the South Sudan.
Bishop Ergolano Ladu Tombe of the Catholic Diocese of Yei is calling on the country's political leaders to do more to improve the security situation so that refugees and internally displaced persons can return home.
Many of our people are now refugees. Others are internally displaced. In Yei, too many internally displaced people. The government may say there are no internally displaced people. They use a different terminology. Okay, but for us, these are IDPs. Nobody can deny that. Some people who are unruly could easily also take up the guns to spoil the country with the little peace, relative peace at least that the country is gaining. And we hope that this time the extension will not go beyond 6 months. And we are supporting the peace that is being signed and supporting it with our prayers, with our advices to the government.
Bishop Tombe says church leaders are working to reconcile and reunite communities torn apart by the violence over the past 5.5 years. Retired Bishop Emeritus Enoch Tombe of Razaf Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan to stress the need for the parties to improve security, saying peace and stability are key drivers of economic growth and development in any developing country like South Sudan. Bishop Tombe is urging the parties to end all forms of human rights violations.
We really had wanted that complete violence should really stop. Killing of people should stop. I mean, there's no need to kill people or rape women or kill the youth. This is no longer acceptable by any standards. And if the leaders were listening to the church leaders, they've gone up to the Vatican, they really should fulfill the promise they have made at that high level. We have really made a promise. And, you know, when we sing this national anthem, even me, I also put my hand here. You know, when I say, oh God, we glorify your name and then bless us, and we don't get the blessing as you put it. I think we should really be sincere.
Reverend John Okumu Hakim, Executive Director for Peace and Justice at the Africa Island Church, says the parties will implement all pre-transitional activities within the 6 months extension. Okumu, who represents faith-based groups on the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, is urging the parties to develop a clear roadmap for implementing the provisions during the extended pre-transitional period.
We encourage and urge the parties to double their effort within the 6 months period so that we cannot make any excuses again. As a church leaders, we tell them that let them commit themselves in spirit and letter. They should abide by that and consistently without delay.
The parties now have until November to implement all pre-transitional activities to pave the way for forming a unity government at the end of the pre-transitional period. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Break Your Back by BM. We've been listening to BM with that song, Break Your Back. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Like